Truth Seekers, Mike Molloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Stick around tonight. We have a flu-safe environment for you to listen to the program in. We promise not to infect you. A lot of flu coverage here at the beginning of the program. We're also going to have a Bridget Speaks segment tonight and a few other things. Just to give you an update, before we get really rocket rolling here, an update on podcast subscriber membership roles. We're getting there. I want to thank everybody who has taken the time to subscribe to the podcasts. Other than what few advertising dollars may still be floating around out there in the ether, the podcast subscriptions are what will keep the program going. We're very, very close to a break-even point right now. So for the people who took a chance and subscribed right at the beginning, your money's safe. We will be here for a while. But we're almost at that point. So if you're thinking about subscribing, renewing your subscription next year is a great idea. But the subscription that is needed now is the subscription that is needed now. You understand what I'm saying? So if you would, go to MikeMolloy.com, sign up, become a podcast subscriber. It's 25 cents a program. And for your quarter, that's on an annual basis. For your quarter, you'll get more than just the podcast. We have other things coming. And our web department is working furiously on getting these other aspects up. So we'd like to continue, and if you're someone who appreciates the craziness on this program, I know you want us to continue, too. So to the people who have subscribed during this – how long has it been, Kathy, first month? This first month, or close to it, of the Molloy program flying solo, thank you. You have made a big enough dent in that initial startup cost to do something like this that we are in almost at a break-even point. No, we don't need any money to live, Kathy and me. What the hell? We're almost at that point. So thanks. And keep it coming, because we're just at that critical juncture now. All right? Okay. And I'll try not to give another pitch for this tonight, although we probably will run the spot, the recorded spot, the commercial, but...
Oh, that's only because we don't have any advertising.
Well, that's true. That's true. We also run, we're going to be running an awful lot of PSAs, you will hear, but they're good PSAs. None of this, I hope we got some new ones. Do we have some new PSAs? Oh, good. Okay. I don't want those ones about, some of the old, only you can prevent forest fires.
No, I think they retired that one about, I don't know, 87 or 88.
Okay, good. Well, I just don't, you know, some of these old ones about, what's that, that phony anti-drug thing, DARE, the DARE program that went into the schools, and most of the kids who went through the DARE program were more inclined to use drugs.
Made it sound so exciting.
Yeah, let's not use that one. But, you have some new ones, I hope. Okay. All right. We'll have a lot of PSAs. And you will be able, if you're listening on the radio, you'll be able to tell when we go to your local, affiliate, because I'm sorry, what are you laughing at behind the glass?
Because you'll hear commercials.
Right, that's what I was gonna say. You'll hear PSAs from us, and then you'll hear commercials from our local affiliate. But that's alright, that's okay. We're here. Everyone has to be somewhere. We're here. The swine flu, actually, it's not swine flu. It is a, and that's a misnomer. I really wish media who are using that term would stop, because it is not swine flu. It is not avian flu. It is not human flu. It is a combination, kind of like recombinant DNA has been put together here by this virus. It has borrowed from pigs, birds, and humans, and possibly has come up with something that is fairly easily transferable from human to human. If that's the case, then, well, maybe you shouldn't subscribe to the program to begin with. Maybe we'll all be dead within a few months. Whew. Or the survivors will not really particularly care about hearing a talk radio program. But on the other hand, if we do get control of this, this time, they know what they being the researchers, the scientists, the epidemiologists, they know what they have to overcome. This is not like guesswork. This is not like trying to figure out, okay, let's offer up flu vaccine for the winter of 2009, but we don't know what the flu is going to be, so let's try to guess here. This one takes no guesswork whatsoever. This one is clearly identifiable to virologists. They know what the monster is. And they also know how to disable it. The problem is in doing it quick enough, getting the vaccine developed and distributed and into human beings. Now, there will be a lot of people who I'm sure will resist the vaccine, people who are anti-vaccine for whatever reason. And I'd like to say one thing to you people. Goodbye. I don't know how else to put it. If you don't want to do this, that, of course, is your business. But I am hoping that the people, the scientists who understand how an organism, a living organism, whether it is a human being or a virus, can mutate and evolve into a new form. Now, I also would suggest that all the Christians who believe in the inerrancy of the Bible, especially the book of Genesis, you people should not get a vaccine, a shot for this if one is developed, for a simple reason that if you do, you will be declaring yourself a hypocrite, because you are the people who say that this sort of mutation or evolution is impossible and demonic to think about and is against the Bible, because God created everything all at once and it was done. So such a thing as a mutated organism can't exist, right? So I would hope that all fundamentalist Christians who believe in the inerrancy of the Bible will stay out of the vaccine lines, and let those of us who don't believe that sort of hog snot step forward so we can get a shot, if you understand what I'm getting at here, all right? This may be your ticket to heaven. For those of us who don't look at life that way, we might want to stick around a little bit longer, and we'll risk a flu vaccine. Oh, God. Mexico is, of course, the you might call the country Mexico patient zero on this thing. Have the right-wingers started screaming yet about Barack Obama's failure to secure the borders with Mexico? Because, you know, this now, doesn't this makes Barack Obama a mass killer, doesn't it? Huh? To the right-wingers, doesn't it make Barack Obama a mass killer? Of course, it was not Barack Obama. It was Karl Rove and Dick Cheney and George Bush. Let's not forget him. And before them, it was Bill Clinton. And before him, it was George Herbert Walker Bush, who have failed to secure the borders, as though the viruses would look at the borders and say, oh, well, we can't go over there. It's secured. Oh, damn. We'll have to stay here in Mexico. But this is the kind of garbage I'm sure that the nativists and the right wingers are just vomiting about tonight. Huh? Am I wrong? I don't know. I haven't listened to it. But let's not call it swine flu. There are cases of this new flu. Let's call it the new flu. Isn't that nice? The victims are mostly between the ages of 20 and 50, which is unusual in that that mimics the pandemic of 1918. And there's more. There's so much more here, so stick around.
Well, I'm done with the flu. Oh, and I don't know what to do. Well, my doctor gave me up. He said I can't do no.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, you may have seen all this today, or, you know, maybe not. I don't know how you could avoid it, all this flu information, and I'm not minimizing the importance of getting the information out at all. It is an issue that has wiped everything off the slate, and possibly that's not a bad thing. It always cracks me up that when an issue appears that seems to involve the survival of the public, then picayune little matters like torture seem to disappear. Or maybe they're put in perspective. Now, I'm not minimizing torture. I'm just saying, in the great scheme of things, we allow each other certain license to do things. Torture is one that we allow each other to do. I know we have prohibitions against it all over the place, but we still allow it. And then we make all kinds of wild ass excuses about what it is or isn't, or how it happened or didn't happen. And it becomes a great big issue for debate instead of being the stain on whatever passes for ethics that is left available to the human race, but all of a sudden along comes something like a planet heading to wipe out life on Earth as we know it, or an injection of superheated solar plasma that is going to devour everything in its path, or a pandemic like a virus, a murderous virus that has nothing to stop it, and all of a sudden Karl Rove becomes a piece of dirt under your foot. Nothing. Just absolutely nothing. Torture becomes an issue that is, yes, an ethical stain, but all of a sudden we see it for what it is. It the craziness of human beings begging to be wiped off the planet. Just begging for the cosmic hoo-ha to say, you know, I've had enough of this garbage. Here. Like that. So the story has been out there all day, and forgive me if you've already gone through this a million times, but the states involved now, the countries involved now, are increasing probably even as we speak. The U.S., of course, and Mexico, Scotland, Israel, Brazil, Guatemala, Peru, Australia, New Zealand. In the United States, I believe Ohio, Kansas, Texas, and California. What is puzzling right now to the experts is the flu is killing people at an alarming rate. I believe the mortality rate at this point is around 7%. in the Mexico cases, and of course, since Mexico is almost a failed state, it's almost collapsed. It is on the verge of becoming a narco state. There is no way to verify any of those records or any of those statistics whatsoever. But using the best epidemiological methods available to them, them being the CDC and the U.S. Health Department, it appears to be a 7% mortality rate, which is 70 times what the rate would be in a normal flu season in the United States, where I believe 0.1% to 1% of people who get this illness die. So what we're dealing with in Mexico, or what the Mexicans are dealing with, seems to be almost like it's a different virus than from the one that we're dealing with here, where so far no one has died that can be linked directly to this particular virus. It is strange. We are at phase four. There are six pandemic alert phases. We're at number four, six being the highest. And that is verified human-to-human transmission able to cause community-level outbreaks, significant increase in risk of a pandemic. Phase five, we should probably reach tomorrow, because phase five is human-to-human transmission in at least two countries. That is a strong signal that a pandemic is imminent. Phase six is where the virus spreads to another country in a different region. Global pandemic is then underway. Now, in Canada, six cases have been recorded at opposite ends of the country, in British Columbia and in Nova Scotia. So, it's going to get very, very profound, I think, very, very quickly.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It is 26 past the hour. You know what is happening in Mexico, of course. Around the world, different governments are reacting to this in different ways. Most countries so far are just keeping track of what's going on, although I believe there has been an uptick in the availability of Tamiflu and Relenza, which apparently, according to the scientists, are the two drugs that can stop the virus from replicating. It is not a vaccine against the virus. Once you have this particular type of flu, if you get one of these drugs into your system within the first 48 hours, it reduces greatly the ability of the virus to replicate, and that lessens your chances of becoming severely ill or dying. And I'm just repeating the information. I don't want to get into a discussion tonight about the value or lack of value in immunization. Everybody has their own opinion about that one. Let me just share with you what Prairie Two wrote, our economics advisor, because this does have A pandemic does have an economic component for sure. It is the second largest after the health component would be the economic component. Prairie 2 writes, 20 million dead may be a conservative number, and that's not the bad news. He says, Republicans have been holding up the confirmation of the Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, putting a big hole in the health crisis team for the United in the United States. Not only are they holding up her nomination, but the other senior positions in the Department of Health and Human Services as well, including the director of the CDC. The Republicans' rationale is that these people are not pro-life enough. Insert your scream right there. Okay. Prairie 2 goes on. Mexico appears to be experiencing a 7% death rate from the new super swine flu, if true. This is three times the death rate experienced in the U.S. during the 1918 flu pandemic and 70 times the typical 0.1% death rate most years. Typically, the flu kills 30,000 Americans each year. If this does come to pass, you could be looking at between 10 and 20 million U.S. deaths, assuming the mortality rate does not exceed past experience here. There were areas in 1918 that experienced a 20% death rate and some towns that were virtually wiped out. This is not the really bad news. Normally, the flu kills mostly the very weak, people near the end of life, either from age or other illness. This type of flu kills almost exclusively people under 60, with half of the victims being between 20 and 40, since it is an allergic-like, overactive immune response that causes pneumonia, killing the victim. Not only have the Republicans held up the Obama administration from filling critical health jobs, but they capped off their death wish for America by stripping out funding for pandemic readiness from the stimulus bill. They ridiculed the connection between preparing for a major health crisis and the health of the economy. If the worst happens, and it's a big if the worst happens, and 20 million healthy Americans die in the prime of life, as this plays out over the next 2 years, you can forget about the health of the economy. Prairie 2. What is it about science or research that is like bile to Republicans? Such an anti-science group, huh? Anti-thought, anti-American, anti-life, anti-everything. Jesus, God, what is wrong with them? Oh, and by the way, a couple of people have written in today about Tamiflu and the connection with Donald Rumsfeld. Yeah, Rumsfeld was a big stock holder in the company that makes Tamiflu. Sure, absolutely. Did Rumsfeld start this order to make money? I don't know. I really don't. But all I know is, let me back up a little bit. There is also some ideas circulating around, some real tinfoil hat stuff circulating around that the virus was something that was in the process of being developed, weaponized flu virus. It was one of those weird experiences that was being developed by the military. I remember, was it last week? Three vials of virus samples went missing from a Maryland facility. That would be Fort Detrick, the famous black hole that seems to produce death and destruction of the most unimaginable sort, whether it's anthrax or this is the biological warfare center of the United States. And, of course, none of this is supposed to be going on. We signed a treaty against biological warfare. So three viruses went missing, and of course, it's been we've been told that the vials, I'm sorry, three the vials of viruses went missing. We've been told that the vials contained samples of Venezuelan equine encephalitis, a virus that kills horses. And it can be spread to humans by mosquitoes. And this particular virus, in most cases, the vast majority of cases, humans who get this, the result of humans getting that is a virus, is this a flu-like. They get flu-like symptoms. And whether they die or not, I guess, depends on their overall general health. They can be deadly in about one out of, what does it say here, one out of 100 cases. That's according to a spokeswoman for the Army's Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases. The Army's Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases. Yeah, what do you suppose they do there? Mm-hmm, that's right. Now, the vials that are missing had been at the Research Institute facility at Fort Detrick. That's, of course, I love the way it's described. Home of the Army's top biological research facility. Facility. Boom, boom. Oh, my God. So there's that issue. That was reported last week by CNN. And then there is also the issue of, as the pig man says, there's the issue of this factory along the U.S.-Mexican border that produces vaccine. Is that real? I don't even know if that's real. But apparently there's a factory down there where this stuff has been made. A vaccine was being made. And all of a sudden, this has happened. There's also bird flu virus samples from Indonesia that were sent to Los Alamos Laboratory to develop weapons. There's all kinds of stuff going on. All kinds of stuff. There's a venture capital firm set to reap rewards on this flu vaccine. This says, killer flu recreated in the lab in 2004. Scientists have shown that tiny changes to modern flu viruses could render them as deadly as a 1918 strain which killed millions. A U.S. team added two genes from a sample of the 1918 virus to a modern strain known to have no effect on mice, and then the mice all died. I'm not laughing, except... just, I don't know, because of the craziness of it all. You know, just the complete craziness of it all. There may be some sort of operation going on. Then there's this. This comes from DeadlineLive.info, a news website. The recent swine flu outbreak taking place in Mexico may have originated at a U.S.-owned pig breeding farm by the name of Granjas Carroll, also known as Carroll Farms, which is owned in part by the Smithfield Food Company. Smithfield also promotes the consumption of genetically altered foods, even owns certain genetic lines of pork breeding. On April 12th, before the swine flu outbreak was covered by mainstream media outlets, the Mexican newspaper La Jornada broke a story on how Carroll Farms was polluting the drinking water near the towns of La Gloria and Perote in Veracruz, the state of Veracruz. According to this newspaper, Carroll Farms maintains a strong political influence in municipal governments in the area. And the article goes on with the usual stuff that you would find when an American-owned company goes into some other country and where there are no even moderate environmental protection laws, and immediately begins to destroy, the American firm does, everything in its sight: groundwater, the earth, the soil, the air, just pollute it with all kinds of toxins and chemicals, because that's how capitalism works. You know what I'm saying?
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
I went to the doctor. I went to the mountains. I looked to the children. I drank from the fountain. We go to the doctor. We go to the mountains.
It's about 10 before the hour. You know, it isn't just the government health establishment in this country that the Republicans are refusing to, members of that establishment refusing to confirm for strictly their little bitchy political ideological reasons. Again, just remember, and I blogged about this today, the Republicans they would rather see mass death, chaos, disease, destruction than see Barack Obama succeed. Republicans, these conservatives, the Limbots would murder their own mothers if not murdering their own mothers would guarantee that Barack Obama would succeed. I mean, this is how sick and degenerate Republicans and conservatives really are. They hate the country. They hate life. They hate science. They hate everything except their twisted little visions of, I don't know, sky spooks and raptures and free market capitalism. Ah! So, but it's not just the government health establishment. When Bush's lawyers claimed that the Geneva Convention should be dismissed as quaint and obsolete, remember that? And that Bush could go ahead and order torture and warrantless wiretapping and all this other stuff. Well, as The Nation reports, Yale Law School Dean Harold Coe and Indiana University Law Professor Dawn Johnson, these two people were prominent among the critics of the Bush crime family. And why not? Yale Law School Dean, Indiana University Law Professor. Anyway, Barack Obama has now nominated both of them to key posts in the Justice. Well, one in the Justice and one in the State Department. One will be legal advisor to the State Department, and head of the Office of Legal Counsel is the other position. The OLC, that's the one where all the poison emanated that destroyed the U.S. Justice Department. Now, Obama has done this ostensibly to help restore respect for the rule of law. I know, there's the other stuff that he's continuing the Bush policies, rendition. Detainees at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan are not afforded constitutional protections and so on and so forth. I don't know what to think. I'm just reporting what's in The Nation. Okay. So, Republicans have mounted campaigns to oppose these two nominations. And you gotta wonder what they're afraid of. Coe and Johnson, of course, are the antithesis of thugs and criminals and psychopaths like John Yoo and David Addington. Those are the lawyers who claimed, powers for George Bush, not unlike a regent. But, you know, that should be reason for celebration, these two. Coe and Johnson are skeptical about claims of unchecked authority, either by the president, vis-a-vis the other branches, or by the United States on the world stage. Some bloggers label such views radical, but they're only as radical as the Constitution's framers, who feared the aggrandizement of presidential power and committed the new nation to respect for international law. That's what the whole thing was founded on. Jesus God. Anyway, as the Nation says in their noted page, some have charged that Coe would place international law above the Constitution. but you know, what do you expect from a Republican? Of course they're going to say that. Coe readily acknowledges the preeminence of constitutional law. He's argued that it is sometimes appropriate when interpreting our Constitution to look to international and foreign law for guidance. That's a view shared by the majority of the Supreme Court. You know, contrary to what Republicans and Bush and Cheney and the rest of these monstrous bastards on the religious right, contrary to what they think, we are not the chosen people. We do not have some exclusive vocal or oral connection to God. We are no different from pygmies living in Central Africa. We're not. We're no different from, you know, we do not have a manifest destiny. We really, really don't. There is nothing unique about people who happen to come here and claim American citizenship, whether by immigration or by birth. I mean, you know, regardless of what Lou Dobbs says. I mean, there's nothing special about being an American, except that we have this enormous military behind us, and that means we can threaten anybody on earth. I guess that makes us special, right? We can threaten them, give us your oil, or we'll devour your country. What? You hesitate? Boom. You know, I mean, that's pretty simple, isn't it? Give us your banana plantations, or we will devour your country. What? You hesitate? Boom. You know, just on and on and on. But when you get right down to it, the difference between Americans and, say, Maoris in New Zealand, the difference is zero. Zilch. Zip. Any perceived difference has to do with the ego or the sense of specialness that Americans seem to be born with. Not actually born with, but it's stuffed in there very quickly, isn't it? Especially if you're a white Christian American. Oh, well, you know, you are who you are, dear heart, because Jesus selected you to be special. But we're really not. We're not special at all. Therefore, to look at international and foreign law for guidance on how we govern ourselves makes perfect sense to people who are rational or who believe in ordering processes so that human beings can coexist, whether it's in your neighborhood or in the European Union or wherever, right? We'll be back after the break. Do stick around. Welcome back. My name is Mike Malloy. This is the Malloy Program. We're not quite ready to take calls yet, but when we do, the number here is 877-99-MALLOY or 877-996-2556. Reg writes in that it is a conspiracy, this flu virus, for sure. She writes, NPR yesterday reported that the virus combines genetic material from pigs, birds, and humans in a way researchers have not seen before. This is man-made, not natural. It just doesn't happen. But we'll soon learn that 19 young Muslims directed by Osama bin Laden created this virus in a lab located in a cave in Afghanistan, and including pigs was just their clever way of throwing us off track. Oh, and there will be, surely, a bipartisan commission formed to investigate. Yeah. Well, let me get an expert in here. Regarding the biology of this, is it possible, Catherine, for this to be not man-made, that the combination of viral material, genetic material from pigs, birds, and humans can come together and form a new virus?
Well, just from my non-expert opinion, I would say yes, that that's possible. I think you'd probably be better served asking Sanjay Gupta or someone like that. But yeah, it's possible. It doesn't have to be cooked up in a lab.
And what under what conditions? The reason I'm asking you, no, you're not Sanjay Gupta, but you have taken more biology classes than any 10 people I know. What under
that was a mistake.
Under what conditions would such a new viral agent come into being?
It would just have to be a freak mutation. It would just have to be a cross species jump of bird flu and swine flu.
And human flu.
And human flu. I mean, it would just have to be something that randomly happened. But yeah, there's nothing that does not have to be cooked up in a lab.
So all of this stuff is random mutation, whether it's development.
Well, not necessarily.
Whether it's the development of human eyes or, I'm talking about evolution.
Yeah,
it's all random mutation.
Right. Whatever would best fit an organism's ability to survive in its habitat. That's what Darwin meant by survival of the fittest. It was what fit.
What fit in.
Fit the circumstances. Right. Not fit in terms of like physical fitness, but
right.
Fit in terms of fit the environment as it existed at the time.
So survival of the fittest in this case would be a recombinant DNA creature that had a virus, that had all three, pigs, birds, and human.
Anything that makes it stronger and ensures it's, you know, passing its genetic material into future generations, which is exactly why that 1918 epidemic was so deadly, was because it did target the healthy individuals in society instead of the weak, because those are the most reproductive.
So is it fair to say that, as most of these scientists have said, we've not seen this before, that's kind of immaterial. Of course, if it is a new animal, of course they haven't seen it before.
Right.
So, okay.
Right.
All right, just checking.
Okay. That's all I know. I don't know anymore. I mean, I only took all those biology courses because we kept moving and my credits wouldn't transfer and I had to just keep taking the same, anyway.
Right. I understand. This is from Mike in Seattle. He writes, interesting that it took a liberal to let us see our returning dead soldiers. And I'm not sure who that liberal was, but whoever it was was that somebody from the ACLU? I guess it was, who said that not allowing Americans to see the return of the soldiers and Marines that were sent to their deaths by George W. Bush denied the American public what we go to great lengths to deny anyway, and that is any slice of reality that is available. I mean, come on, this is the United States. We don't want reality. Oh my God. That's why we have Botox and Hummers and 80 inch screen televisions, you know, I mean, but when you commit your young people to go die for corporate America, there should be some sort of awareness on the part of the, people who make up that population who's willing to do that. Right. So, knowing this, the corporate rulers of this country several years ago decided, okay, that's it. No more letting the dumbasses see the dead coming home, because if the dumbasses see the dead coming home, the dumbasses will not present their children for cannon fodder as readily as if they didn't see the dead coming home. So a moratorium was declared on any type of photo or video reproduction of the dead returning to Dover Air Force Base. But several weeks back, this 18-year-old ban on media coverage of fallen soldiers returned to the U.S. was lifted. Since then, now remember what the Republicans said, that military families needed privacy. Oh, what a, you know, like, oh, you rotten son of a bitches, you. The right-wingers for saying that. This from people who never send their children to die. So they hid behind the skirts and work pants of the parents who sent their children that were sucked up by corporate America to go die. The Republicans said, oh, well, you know, these poor grieving families need their privacy. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And besides, you know, the peace creeps are going to exploit the images, so we can't have any of this. Well, neither situation has come to pass. In fact, according to the Associated Press, most families of the returning dead who are given the option have allowed reporters and photographers to witness the ceremonies that mark the arrival of these flag-draped coffins. The ban on coverage goes back to 1991 when George Herbert Walker Bush, the son of the man who aided the Nazis in establishing the death camps, George Herbert Walker Bush imposed it during the Persian Gulf War. And, of course, the Republicans said, well, this is a way to protect the privacy of grieving families, which it was not. It was the corporatist way of hiding the human and political cost of war. That's all. That's all it was. Since the ban was lifted, 19 families have been asked whether they wanted media coverage of their loved one's return, and 14 have said yes. A Pentagon spokesman said earlier this month, when 16 families had been asked, 13 consented. So, another spokesman for the Air Force Mortuary Affairs Office said reporters have been cooperative and there haven't been any problems. And, of course, media interest has fallen off sharply since several weeks back when 40 reporters, photographers, and camera operators turned out to document the arrival of Air Force Tech Sergeant Philip Myers of 30 of Hopewell, Virginia, who died April 4th in Afghanistan. He was the first combat casualty whose return to American soil was witnessed by the news media since one of the Bush crime family members imposed the ban. Even if no one from the media shows up, according to the Associated Press, the Department of Defense films each casualty arrival for which consent is given and presents a recording to the family. So, once again, I mean, every single argument that Republicans make is based on deception, lies, misinformation, and the fact that they consider all of us to be dumbasses. Now, tell me again, why does anyone vote Republican anymore?
Unasked, won't you join in and fight with the allies? What could we say? We're only 25 years old.
With 25 sweet summers and hot fires in the cold.
This kind of life makes that violence unthinkable.
We'd like to play hockey, have kids and grow old.
Fighters for Texaco.
You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
I am the promise never broken. 21 past the hour. And talk about, talk about volleyballs. Governor Rick Perry of Texas, who last week was making all this noise. It sounded like farting noises, but it was actually Governor Rick Perry suggesting that Texas might consider seceding from the Union. Remember? And go where, you dumbass? Anyway, he's now requesting help from the federal government in order to deal with the possible swine flu pandemic, right? You see, this is what really kind of makes me wish I was the king of America, because I would be so inclined to say to Rick Perry, kiss my grits, dude. You know, you made your big dramatic throwdown, a couple of weeks ago. What? You're just like Sean Hannity. You're a little piss ant that has all the courage of a caterpillar. All of you right wingers, exactly the same. So now, all of a sudden, a couple of weeks ago, you didn't have to worry about this, did you, Rick? But now, all of a sudden, according to, where does this come from? I don't know, AP. Governor Rick Perry, in a precautionary measure, requested the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, to provide 37,430 courses of antiviral medications from the Strategic National Stockpile and send it down to Texas to prevent the spread of swine flu. And currently, 3 cases have been confirmed in Texas. There again, we're calling it swine flu, and it's not. But you see how quickly these little right-wing rat bastards just come running like scared little boogers. You know, as soon as they step out of the shadows and start pounding on their chests, and something steps out of the same shadows they just came from and says, boo, they just run like cockroaches, don't they? Don't they? Now, there was a poll a couple of weeks ago that said 37% of Texans and 51% of Texas Republicans agree with Governor Rick Perry's recent suggestion that Texas may need to leave the United States. Well, go ahead then. Come on, you don't need the federal government. It's just some old boy up there running it from, how old is he? 47. He's from where? He's from Illinois. And he's running things. Oh, we're going to secede. Here, give me a tea bag. Here, let me rub a tea bag in your face. All you Texans who are talking all this trash. I start with you, Rick Perry. You cowardly son of a bitch, you. If you are so quick to want to secede, this be perfect time to do it, boy. Go ahead. That will save the rest of us having to send all of these soon-to-be very valuable vaccinations down to your scummy state. Now, we realize a lot of liberals and Democrats are going to suffer, but you know what our advice to the liberals and Democrats in Texas? 2 words, get out. Man. Some people wrote to thinkprogress.org after they posted this. Here's some comments. Use the money that Perry is asking for to build a fence around Texas and suspend all travel from that third world cesspool. After all, we must secure our borders. Here's another one. Just what in the bleeding eyes of any deity you choose to pray to does political will have to do with prosecuting heinous crimes? What the hell is this? Must be something else. Here's another one. Aha! Requesting help from the federal government for a possible pandemic and disaster relief after hurricanes and floods. Federal help in building roads he can travel on and bridges he drives over. Bet he'll take Social Security checks and take advantage of the Medicare system, too. And here's another one. You know what we need to solve this problem? A border fence that protects the 49 United States from the dumbass Republic of Texas. Well, now, come on. We're just being a little bit harsh on Texans, aren't we? The 49% of even Republicans who didn't say we should, you know, they should get out of the union. And the 63% of normal people in Texas who also did not agree. But isn't that just exactly like a Republican coward? Aren't they all like this? Every single one of them? Huh? How many times did the pig man, Rush Limbaugh, mock people who sought treatment for emotional or psychological or addiction problems? Remember what his cure was? Lock the son of a bitches up! Until it came his turn after dosing himself with OxyContin for about 8 years and destroying his ability to hear, Then all of a sudden, what does Rush do? He runs to a facility that's going to cure him, huh?
I hate these pigs.
It's all gone crazy. Well, my wife returns from taking my little girl to school. She got beads of perspiration as she tries to keep her cool. She says that mess, it don't get no better. There's gonna come a day, someone's gonna get killed out there. And I turn to her and say, Texas. She says, what? I said, Texas.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. A couple emails here, then we will have a quick visit from Bridget. Bridget speaks. Prairie 2 writes, regarding the viruses, we have entered into a debate here. Reg, Prairie 2, and Kathy. Prairie 2 writes, this is not a mutation per se. Influenza is characterized as a very sloppy virus. It tears itself apart into 8 pieces every time it reproduces by division, then reassembles. This means that trillions times trillions of chances to mutate puts it... trillions times trillions of chances to mutate, plus it tends to pick up scraps of DNA from its host as it does this. To combine strains from different animal species and or flu strains, it would require that the victim be infected with at least 2 viruses at once. Huge hog farms are the perfect incubator for this to happen. Normally, this happens in South China, where many millions and millions of hogs, domestic ducks, and people live crowded together. Wild ducks spread the virus around until you get one that can spread back and forth between pigs and humans. Then a new human strain will start to spread from there. This is the first known occurrence in North America, what's happening now. Reg writes, a virus is not a, quote, living organism, end quote, and we have no clue about how viruses evolve. They don't mutate the way living organisms do. A virus does not carry on life processes. They don't eat or digest food or carry on respiration or circulation or other activities that define life. They cannot live outside the host, even though they can be transmitted from one host to another. A virus can replicate, but otherwise does not fall into the category of any of the biological kingdoms. That's why I don't believe a genetically odd virus such as this can be easily explained. Viruses all have genes made from either DNA or RNA, long molecules that can carry genetic information. All have a protein coat that protects these genes. But we know very little of their origins, and even less about how different types have evolved. There are theories, but we do know they don't just exist in communities, changing form over time the way that microbes evolve or mutate. Several thousands of different viruses have been identified. This one is very, very strange and even affects humans strangely. This flu increases in potency when it is recognized by the immune system. The healthier the immune system, the more the person is in danger of reacting badly to the virus. I remain very suspicious. Reg. It is certainly a mystery. All right, it's time for Bridget Speaks. Hi, Mike. I've been rather silent lately because when you're standing in the middle of a state fair carnival grounds, it's a little difficult to focus. About the time you decide that the tilt-a-whirl is the center of attention, your friends all head for the roller coaster. And then you're lured by the intoxicating smell of cotton candy and spend the next half hour in an alternative universe on a sugar high. Now, I'm not really comparing the crises in this country and the world to a carnival. Well, okay, yes, I am, even though I know it's much more serious than that. What makes it all seem like a carnival is the news media. And the way they portray each big story, I'm pretty sure that you and I, most of your listeners, have known for years that we were lied into a war, that there was torture going on, that the middle class in this country was being fleeced, that unregulated capitalism was a speeding train heading for the edge of a cliff where the tracks ended in thin air. Cheney had the oil company executives in his office dividing up the Iraqi oil fields under the guise of creating an energy policy before the Iraq war. We tortured people to get false information about an operational link between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. We were torturing children to get their parents to talk. Really? Gosh, I had no idea. Well, actually, I did. And so did you, and so did anyone, it seems, except our, we know more than you do, Congress, and our national cadre of crack journalists. Right after the Abu Ghraib, the Ghraib pictures surfaced, Seymour Hersh wrote about the videos and the pictures that hadn't yet surfaced. What did Congress and the corporate-owned news media do? They ignored it. There was plenty of evidence that this country had been taken over by a crime syndicate. What did Nancy Pelosi do? She took impeachment off the table. Quote, they told us that they had legal opinions about what they could do regarding torture, but they never told us they were doing it, Pelosi said. Oh, please. I was returning from Denver recently, looking out the window at 37,000 feet on a beautiful clear day, enjoying the patterns in the landscape, the crisscrossing road lines, the rolling green mounds of forest, and it occurred to me to wonder whether what happens to those we send to Washington, D.C., do they get on an airplane of sorts and never come down? Is election to national public office a kind of permanent ticket to looking at the world from 40,000 feet, seeing all the forest but never seeing a tree? And from that perspective, even if you get reports that a million trees have been felled this month or that 600,000 people have lost their jobs, you don't really see it. You're not driving a dirt road through a clear cut, wondering what happened to all the animals who called this forest home. You're not looking into the haunted eyes of those standing in lines at the unemployment office, knowing their benefits are about to run out and they still haven't found another job and wondering how they will feed their families when that happens. Perhaps to deal with problems on a national or global scale, it's necessary for some people to keep themselves isolated in their high-flying D.C. offices. Perhaps the overwhelming nature of the problems, is more than some can deal with at close range, more than they can allow into their consciousness. I continue to hope that that is not true for Obama, even though his office is the one that needs to be able to soar at 40,000 feet occasionally. The carny huckster pundits are busy outshouting each other over investigating whether Obama's ship of state has managed to reach cruising altitude in its first 100 days. The cackling news gaggle is squawking about whether his takeoff has been successful. There's a problem with the question. The flocks of migratory birds were circling, just waiting for his plane to take off, and they've been slamming into his engine since the moment he left ground. Whether or not he's accomplished what he or those of us wandering around the country among the carny rides might have wanted in this early stage of his presidency. Well, I think it's a miracle that he's managed to keep the ship in the air this long. I don't hold out any hope that he can do so indefinitely. We're out of gas, and the engines are clogged with dead birds. I just hope that the so-called air traffic controllers who were asleep on the job and didn't scream emergency years ago get the hell out of the way. Maybe Obama would turn out to be a good enough pilot to land us safely on the Hudson. In the meantime, I'm taking frequent breaks from the carnival, spending time with seedlings in the greenhouse and digging in the dirt. It is, after all, spring, the time to take the composted manure that's been gathering and work it into the soil to act as food for what we will plant next. I wonder if that's part of the metaphor Michelle had in mind with her organic garden. No chemicals, just transforming the crap DC nature provides us to use as fertilizer. There's a lot of raped and pillaged ground in this country that needs to be well fertilized before it can grow anything. But I've got my fingers crossed. The Republicans keep providing tons of garbage for the compost pile, and I know how much recyclable trash is left over after the carnival closes. I've decided to view each new carnival attraction, whether it's new torture revelations or dreadful economic news, as future food for the new garden we need to plant as a country, once it all gets chewed up by the microorganisms in the compost pile, of course. Still ever the optimist, although hanging on by my fingernails, Bridget. Oh, P.S. Sorry about all the mixed metaphors. There's just so much available crap, it's hard to sort through it all. Thanks to Bridget, who wrote that. You can visit Bridget if you want to at fairywoodland.com. Fairy Woodland. That's right. Fairywoodland.com. We have a couple of fairy houses that she and her husband have... actually, it was more of her husband, John... built for Molly. We have a break here? I guess we do. All right, when we come back, just a little quick story I want to tell you about that. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
Yeah, rage against the whatever. 10 before the hour. Bridget at fairywoodland.com, I've mentioned this before, but she and her husband John have this incredible company. They make fairy houses. John makes them out of found material. Rocks and pebbles from streams and pieces of wood. It's really incredible stuff. That's why, you know, I strongly recommend you go to their website and just take a look at this stuff. Fairywoodland.com. But, John built a what I think is a big fairy house. It's like a fairy condominium or something for Molly. It was a Christmas gift last year. And she has it on the back porch, and it's an amazing structure. I think the next time we do a Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag video, I might include a picture of that, although that would be kind of corrupting the fairy house since most of those uncensored mailbag letters are so vile. But anyway, over this weekend, one of my other daughters, a grown daughter, was here with her 9-year-old son. And we're amazed. My grown daughter is 40, and she looked at this fairy house and just kind of stopped her cold in her tracks. And, of course, Molly immediately showed Jake her house, and they had a good time. We went to a puppet show, but also they spent a lot of time playing with this fairy house. And this, it just had this amazing spell over the kids. Well, later that night, Wendy, my daughter, had some of her friends come over for a little get-together who live here in the Atlanta area. Same thing happened. We all went out to the back porch to have a beer and sit around and talk, and they saw this fairy house. First question was, what in the world? And then they would walk over and take a look. And it was amazing to watch the reaction of these people. So if you want to have some fun, go to fairywoodland.com and just look. Look at the art. It's incredible. Here's something else on the virus. This is from Joe. Mike, I'm no expert on this, but I have taken several courses in biology and, as a geology major, a course in invertebrate paleontology. It is my understanding that species never converge, but always diverge in their evolution. So a virus can evolve into several new species, but several different species could not merge into a single virus, at least not in nature. I would have to agree this is a man-made virus. No expert, Joe. All right, well, the consensus seems to be drifting in the direction that this is not something that would normally occur. It had to have been produced by a superior life form. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, writes about Texas secession. He says, I don't worry about Texas secession since the idiots would make Chuck Norris president of Texas and pick George Bush to head their Air Force, and they'd have the only 10,000 bass boat Navy in the world. The religious wackos would treat the state as their own playground, and in no time at all, they'd be the educational equal of, Burkina Faso. By the time they finished stoning to death everyone they don't like, the population would be smaller than that of Liechtenstein. And after removing all the environmental laws, it would be safer for the remainder of the population to drink crude oil instead of the water. The Republic of Texas would probably be empty in less than 5 years. I just found it hysterically, it went beyond irony. It went into pitiful, didn't it? Chuck Perry demanding that the federal government release, or begging that the federal government release 37,000 doses of antiviral medication to the state of Texas. Oh, God, these people. All right, we are, we have a break coming up here in a minute, and we're going to take your phone calls. The number here is 877-996-2556. So bring it on. Genetic liberal sent in, most liberals are hoping that President Obama corrects the following. This is after 100 days in office. One, his choice of corporatist advisors. Two, his half-hearted support of the Employee Free Choice Act. Three, his support of free trade. Four, his escalation of a war in Afghanistan and possibly Pakistan. Five, his half-hearted willingness to prosecute the Bush crime family. Six, his lack of support for Governor Siegelman and other railroaded people. Seven, his support of the Bush FISA compromises. Eight, his continuing the practice of rendition. Nine, his support of insurance companies over single-payer health care. These are nine ideas that are nine things that most liberals are hoping President Obama will correct. Quick piece of advice. Well, no, not advice, observation. We shouldn't hold our breath on any of these, right? That's awful. What an awful thing to say. What an awful thing to say. All right, we have a break here. And then we're going to come back and continue the conversation for the final hour of the program tonight. So if you have something you'd like to say tonight, now is the time to give us a call. 877-996-2556. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. All right, right before the break, I read this email from Joe, who says I'm no expert, but it was his understanding, having taken several courses in biology, that species never converge but always diverge in their evolution. Joe says, so a virus can evolve into several new species, but several different species could not merge into a single virus. All right, I have an email here from our technical advisor, Ben Birch, who writes, no, this happens all the time with microbes. There is something called conjugation, where unrelated microbes can exchange genes. There are other mechanisms, too, and many people think there is no such thing as species when you're dealing with much of the microbial world. Okay, lots of different opinions. I'll tell you what, we have on the line Tom in L.A., listening on KTLK, who you are a biologist, Tom?
I guess I'd be a molecular biologist, yeah.
Well, help us out here. What? How would you explain the emergence of this apparently new virus?
Oh, I think the things that you got to remember are this flu virus, all flu viruses are called orthomyxoviruses, and they have a lot of things which sort of give them an advantage of being able to infect and cause a lot of misery. And one of the things is, unlike a lot of other viruses, they're capable of actually infecting different species with the same type of virus.
Uh-huh.
So you can get a pig virus, a swine virus, that essentially is perfectly adapted in pigs to make them miserable.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still that exact same virus without any sort of recombination or anything else can actually infect human beings,
mm-hmm,
or even birds.
Right, which is the so-called swine flu that killed a million people back in, what, the late 60s?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I forget when, but you're right. And the reason that that's so troubling is these things are, oh, and incidentally, your technical guy, Ben, did a really good job in explaining that stuff. That was some of the stuff I wanted to talk about, and, this stuff with trying to figure out speciation and all that stuff. You really can't, mm-hmm, say that about viruses because they're not even really alive. They're just like little lunar landers with chunks of RNA in them, and that's it. And if you get two of them, like one from a pig and one from a bird that, say, infect a pig,
mm-hmm,
then what happens is those little bits of RNA can mix and match, and what you get out is all sorts of different combinations of viruses from the same animal. And then those get spun off into the world. So the worry about all flus is that it doesn't take many mutations to make, radically new viruses that can be really nasty, like the Spanish flu epidemic back in 1917, 1918.
Mm-hmm.
And because the viruses are capable of infecting across species, it's that thing that makes it really dangerous, because all they have to do is just sort of mix and match the little bits of RNA.
Mm-hmm.
And next thing you know, you've got dozens or thousands or hundreds of thousands of new viruses being spun off.
Earlier tonight, I said that the microbiologists are aware of the structure of this particular virus, this new virus, and therefore finding something to destroy it will not be all that difficult as it was when they were trying to isolate the HIV virus. Is that true?
Yeah, I think you're essentially right there, because all you have to do is you make the vaccine. The, mm-hmm, vaccines for flus are usually extremely effective. And they're not even difficult to do, because the virus is so well known. It's only a few thousand nucleotides. It's like 7 or 8 chunks of RNA, 12,000, 15,000 nucleotides. And all you have to do is if you can just isolate it, what they do is they stick it into, they infect live chicken eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And the chicken eggs just crank out jillions of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Then all you have to do is sort of inactivate it and put it in a vaccine, vaccinate people, and then people can wipe it out pretty quickly. You just need to be able to isolate it, and then you have to crank out the vaccine, which, mm-hmm, there's a certain lag time for that.
Well, I was just going to ask you, what is that lag time from isolation to the production of a virus and into the arms or butts of people?
I really don't know. I was actually, because I have my own blog. I don't really do molecular biology much anymore, but I do have my own blog where I slam Republicans, and there were so many people that were, that wanted to know about the swine flu thing that I was actually just sort of clacking away, putting up a post when I heard you talk about it over the top. And that's when I called you real quick just to talk to you briefly. But I was literally on Wikipedia trying to figure out if there was a quick way to figure out how long it takes. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think generally if you wanted to protect millions and millions of people, a long time, because it's just a matter of cranking out that much product.
Yeah, let me give us your blog site. What if people want to go to your site, there's discussion there.
Well, I just threw up a small little, what I called a mini tutorial on swine flu.
Oh, okay. What's the site?
The name of the site is called Thump and Whip.
Thump, T-H-U-M-P, and
Whip, W-H-I-P.
Thump and Whip. Dot blogspot.
I like to kick around Republicans, so there you go.
Okay. Blogspot.com.
It's just thumpandwhip.com.
That's okay. Just thumpandwhip.com.
Right. And also, I hope some people see it and like it. I just cross-posted over on Fire Dog Lake's Oxdown.
Uh-huh.
So you can
That's a good site. I get a lot of stuff over there. Thumpandwhip.com.
Yep.
All right. Hopefully you'll get some visitors tonight. Listen, thanks, Tom. I appreciate the insight into all this, because biology is not my strong suit. I feel like somebody who's been waterboarded and invited out for a swim then. You know what I'm saying? All right. Thanks again, pal.
Hey, thanks for all your hard work, Mike. I enjoy the program.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Take care. Thumpandwhip.com. I like that. Probably for all the wrong reasons, but I still like it. Tom is in Bowhead City, Arizona, listening online. Hey, Tom.
Yeah, hey, I will be looking up thumpandwhip.com.
Yeah.
And not only that, but I have another take on this issue. Okay, you notice how this came up right around the time that nobody really wanted to talk about the torture issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Barack Obama was, I think, afraid of talking about the torture issue.
I think he wants to avoid that subject, whether there's a new flu virus loose in the human population or not. Obama has made it very clear that he doesn't want a congressional investigation, and he is turning it all over to Eric Holder, his attorney general. So,
which he should.
Yeah, you're right. He should. As far as media coverage of the torture issue, it was wiped off the screens instantly this thing came out. Whether that's good, bad, or indifferent is, I guess we all have to make that decision. This was like the missing intern, Chandra Levy, back in the summer of 2001. That's all you heard for 2.5 months, until all of a sudden something came along that wiped it off the television screens, and that was the September 11th attack on this country. So,
okay.
Yeah, you can change on a dime, and apparently the news media have decided to change it today.
Right. Okay. Now, have you noticed how silent the Republican bastards have been on this?
On which? The torture issue?
No. On the flu issue. And you'd think that, you know, they would love this.
Well, maybe that's why they're quiet, because this is just one more massive problem for Barack Obama.
Yeah.
I know the mayor's office in Chicago, when Jane, I forget her last name, was mayor, she was defeated next go around by Harold Washington because she didn't get the snow off the street in time. So it's amazing what will motivate people to go to the polls and take out their rage. Thanks a lot, Tom. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
The porch, the lady says at the end of the tunnel was nothing but a burglar's toll. And them that was caught in a cup are all rich and free, but they chained my mind to an endless tomb when they took my only son from me. I know it's true. Oh,
as I saw it on TV. I know it's true.
It is 21 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. One thing that I just want to add before I go back to the to your calls, I blogged about this today at MikeMolloy.com, borrowing heavily from John Nichols, writing at the Nation blog site, about the Republicans who stripped out of the Obama stimulation package roughly $900 million for pandemic preparation. It was in this year's emergency stimulus bill. And David Obey, Wisconsin Democrat, who is the White House, the Appropriations Committee chairman, he's long championed investment in this kind of, type of preparation. Well, he and other advocates for the spending argued correctly that a pandemic hitting in the midst of an economic downturn could turn a recession into something far worse. As John Nichols pointed out, that would result in workers ordered to remain in their homes, workplaces shuttered to avoid the spread of disease, transportation systems coming to a halt, demand for emergency services and public health intervention skyrocketing. And Obey and other advocates for the spending argued that pandemic preparation was essential to any responsible plan for renewing the U.S. economy. Well, as a result of that, this sick, degenerate bastard Karl Rove and some key congressional Republicans, led by, of all people, Maine Senator Susan Collins, attacked the notion that there was a connection between pandemic preparation and economic recovery. So here we are. The World Health Organization says this flu outbreak has the potential to develop into a pandemic. And David Obey's attempt to get this money seems prescient, if nothing else. It was stripped out. I think $10 million was put back in. I don't know what the $10 million is going to do. But when you think that someone like Susan Collins, who every once in a while you want to believe that, or $50 million, says here, Obey and his allies succeeded in securing $50 million for improving information systems at the Department of Health and Human Services. So, there was no money. The Senate version of the stimulus plan included no money whatsoever for pandemic preparedness, thanks to the Republicans and the gutless, stinking Democrats who would not come to David Obey's rescue. But anyway, Susan Collins, who is always characterized as a supposedly moderate Republican, demanding cuts in healthcare spending. I've said it before, and sometimes I feel bad because of people like Susan Collins, that all Republicans are misguided at best, sick, degenerate bastards at worst. And whenever I talk about Susan Collins, or whenever I think of Susan Collins, I think, you know, you really do paint with a broad brush, Molloy. You ought to clean up your act a little bit. And then something like this comes up, and I think, no, I'm right to begin with about that. James is calling from California, Victorville, California, listening on Sirius. Hey, James.
Hey, Mike. I can predict the next big disaster.
All right. What is it?
Well, I don't know yet. It's whatever the Republican says is wasteful spending. I mean, let's see. They said volcano monitoring was wasteful spending.
Right.
But boom, what happened?
Right.
They said that pandemic was, you know, research was wasteful spending. Look what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I just hope that they don't say Skywatch is wasteful spending. Then we're going to get hit by an asteroid. We're all going to die.
They're really the Republicans or so-called conservatives are really a mess, aren't they? I mean, I've never seen anything like their inability to lead, their inability to work through a problem and find a possible or several possible solutions. They're fixated on whether or not gay people can get married. They're fixated on whether or not a woman should have privacy to make a decision about carrying a fetus if she didn't want to. They're fixated on stem cell research, prohibiting it because, you know, it's not God's will or something. They never get anything right, ever.
No, I know. This is just, I mean, everything they say is wasteful spending happens.
Right. It's bizarre. It is so bizarre.
I think this is absolutely hilarious.
Well,
Mike, it was good talking to you again. I haven't talked to you in about a year.
Well, don't be a stranger. I appreciate you.
Oh, no, I listen to you every night. I just don't talk to you very often.
Have you gotten a podcast subscription yet?
No, but as soon as I get on home time off my truck, I am going to, so I can actually catch you the day that I'm off the truck. But I am an old Nova M, you know, founder.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, James. Take care. Are you driving now?
Actually, I'm shut down for the evening.
Okay. All right. Well, drive safe and have a good trip home. Thanks for checking in, pal. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
End your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. Well, this is interesting. You know, Barack Obama is having a press conference Wednesday at 8 p.m. It'll be his third of the year. It also marks his first 100 days in office. ABC, CBS, and NBC, along with a whole host of cable networks, are going to carry the press conference live. If it's still going on when we come on the air Wednesday night, we'll take it too. However, Fox News Channel says they're not going to do it. They're going to show their little drama, Lie to Me, at 8 p.m., Now, of course, networks are not required to show these press conferences, but the Obama administration, you know, made a request for airtime, and usually the networks take it seriously, but not Fox. Of course not. Of course not. And you know the hell of it is. Fox viewers will sit back on their asses Wednesday night and say, huh, I'm not watching him. Huh. He just wants to spend all of our money, you know, and the guy who says that would be drawn unemployment, and his job is now in a factory in Singapore. But, I'm going to go watch it. I'm going to go watch any of that.
I think Fox Network ought to run a special where they have Glenn Beck going around and pouring fake gasoline on people. Oh, no, even better, pouring fake gasoline into Sean Hannity's waterboarded mouth with a rag stuffed in it. I'd like to see that. I'd miss the Obama press conference if I could see that.
You know, you're getting kind of vicious. I think you need to get out of this and go back to work at the slaughterhouse.
While Limbaugh does a hot dog eating contest where he's the only contestant. In the background while it's all going on.
Yeah, okay. I got you, Gabby.
And then we can maybe get some jugglers on the stage. Lie to me. That's appropriate.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? So Fox News Channel will not be carrying President Obama's primetime press conference.
No, you're not saying Fox News Channel. You're talking about Fox Television.
I mean Fox Television, Network, right. Fox Network, right. Not the cable, the over,
exactly.
Over the air? Yeah, over the air. Jesus, God. No surprise here. Mike is listening online, calling from Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How you doing? I'm a podcast subscriber, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
And I wanted to just call. I was calling about this, you know, coincidence thing. You know, I think of coincidence as, you know, me calling my mom and her picking up the phone and saying, oh, my God, I was dialing the number. And, you know, perfect coincidence when, you know, the Republicans and their party of torture are going to be called on the table all day on Monday. And then all of a sudden over the weekend, there's a big flu epidemic. It's just too perfect.
Well, but what are you proposing here?
Well, you know, things have been stolen. I forget where that you know, those files were stolen from. And
uh-huh.
You know, it's just like, you know, Republican operatives all over the place. I know I'm a little bit crazy, but it's like two V. I don't know if you ever saw V for Vendetta.
Oh,
almost exactly the same thing.
Several times. Yeah, you know, Mike, I always get the same sense when something like this happens. The media starts going after, in a determined way, which they're very incapable of doing for most of the time, a story like torture, because, I think there are still people in media who believe that torture is wrong. So they go after this and all of a sudden, a bigger story appears. Like I said earlier tonight, not to minimize, the torture subject, but when you're talking about a global pandemic of a virus that could wipe out hundreds of millions of people, then all of a sudden the predilections of a sick cabal of criminals who ran the United States all of a sudden become secondary to that larger story. And it never fails to amaze me how that stuff pops up.
Yep.
You know, just at the most
magically,
yeah,
all of a sudden,
yeah, all of a sudden, what is it, kismet or serendipity or whatever the word is? All of a sudden, boom! Oh, look at this. So I don't know. I hear what you're saying. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you checking in, pal. You know, and if Mike and I are to believe that there is a cause and effect or a connection, then Mike and I have to enter the world of crazy people, because there couldn't be a connection, could there? Huh? We couldn't really be that mad, could we, Mike, that flu viruses are released on the general population in order to pull focus and attention away from a story of America becoming a torture nation? No, just kismet, serendipity. Colin is listening in Colorado Springs on, what are you listening on, Colin?
I'm listening over the internet.
Online. Hi, welcome to the program.
Nice to talk to you. I have a couple ideas. First of all, Glenn Beck and his 9/12 idea. Imagine a scenario, because we've been talking about the flu tonight.
Wait a minute, Glenn. Wait, Colin.
Problem.
Colin.
I'm sorry.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, you said Glenn Beck and his what? You faded.
9/12.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Oh, okay. So imagine we have the sentiment of 9/12, the day after September 11th, but instead of a national terrorist attack, we have this sort of flu epidemic or a pandemic in the worst case scenario.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you consider the possibilities of what your previous caller was talking about and what you alluded to as hopefully an ironic statement of how people wouldn't actually release this kind of virus on us,
uh-huh.
What you're doing is you're confusing cause and effect. And in a scientific sense, what you do is you take the real facts and you make extrapolations from them. And you form hypotheses of how things are going to happen from here on out. And
mm-hmm.
in a pandemic sense, there aren't going to be any laws. It's chaotic by nature.
Right.
Now, if you're going to assume that, on the one hand, there is, let's say, a new world order ready to put something out like this, and it's going to kill millions and millions of people and enforce their agenda, well, that's one aspect. Maybe Monday morning quarterbacking and without any real substantiation. On the other hand, if you consider the actual population of the world and all the diseases that are prevalent, not to mention the unsanitary conditions from which this possible virus might arise, I would assume that if you go with the numbers, which is billions and billions of actual animals with their own diseases, and things may or may not be obtainable, and certainly in the case of the equine encephalitis loss in Fort Detrick, you know, you mix this with that, and every once in a while you become confused. My hope from this point forward is that people aren't necessarily confused as to reality, let's say.
Right. Okay. I think I know where you're going with that, Colin, but I've got a break coming up here momentarily. That there's too much coincidence for it to be a coincidence. You know, the emergence of this this virus at such an opportune time for the crazy people on you know, in the United States. So I think I get the point. And I don't know, you know, I don't know what to believe anymore. I've said this many times on this program. I almost wish I were flatlined and brain dead like so many Republicans or conservatives who are on television and radio. You know, the zombies like Glenn Beck, like Limbaugh, like Hannity. Because, you know, a zombie has a much easier time of it. You know, he really does. There's so many functions that he doesn't have to worry about. But being a not zombie, which is how I like to characterize myself, I am not a zombie. I have to admit that I'm just completely baffled, befuddled, confused. I don't know anymore. I have no idea. The conspiracy theorists, so-called, I'm not being denigrating here, have spent an awful long time putting out, well, conspiracy theories that when you examine them and take a look, even if you throw part of it away, you're left with some what appear to be salient facts about certain convergent happenings in this country that you know, if you have a rational mind, you can't just sit there and write it all off and say, nah, that's just conspiracy theory. Nah. If you have a rational mind, you look at this stuff and you think, oh my God, you know, 1 + 1 + 1 does equal 3. And this event did occur because that event was occurring and we had to shift focus, or they had to shift focus. But I give up, you know. I mean, I just do a radio program and try to, you know, stay sane. Before the hour, thanks to our crew tonight. As always, Kathy Bay, who engineered, Ben Birch, who is our technical advisor, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, economic affairs correspondent, and Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, our ethical advisors. The executive producer is Kathy Bay. Last one on the virus for tonight, referencing Occam's Razor. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, states, Occam's Razor says that the simplest explanation is often the right one. Given the way viruses mutate and propagate, the odds are a lot higher that the appearance of this epidemic is accidental and entirely natural rather than it being man-made. Now, separate that from the entirely intentional process of news editors using the flu story to bump the torture story from the top headlines. That's a different matter entirely. As in, look, look, over here. Yeah, I hear you. Marge is calling from Maryville, Indiana. Where have you been?
Oh, hiding under a rock. Man. Every time I get ready to pick up the phone, a thunderstorm comes marching through, and I, nah.
You know, there are a bunch of people listening to this program. They're going to put together a search party and come and try to find you.
You were looking for, you were saying a coincidence, serendipity.
Yeah.
How about collusion?
Collusion. That's a good one, too.
Oh, and Kathy's little group that she had lined up before for her gathering.
Yeah, her poker game.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay. Don't forget Carl Rose.
Oh,
he's entitled to special mention.
Yeah, he's the one that's juggling.
Oh, he's the juggler. Right. Okay, I got you. Yeah.
Boy.
Yeah, it's a mess. Well, you know, here's the only thing that I read about this flu epidemic that left me with a feeling of not being completely freaked out is the fact that you and I are too old to get it.
You know, wear a mask, wash your hands, and don't ever drink the water. And if the ground starts to shake, grab something firm.
Don't drink the water.
Well, if you're going south of the border, my God, oh. They've been saying that for years.
Oh, that's true. I have a friend who just came back from Mexico. She was down there, just got back about a week ago. She lives in Queens, New York, where all the kids got sick because they had been in Mexico. So I called her today and asked her if she had a dizziness or a high fever, and she said, "Call me later. Right now, I'm in the intensive care unit." No, I'm just kidding. She was not sick. I'm stunned by all this, Marge. I don't know what to think anymore.
Well, in the middle of all that conversation, did you hear any of the medical types? I forget what do they call us people that are in charge of epidemics? There's a name for them. But anyway,
epidemic people.
Yes, those kinds.
Yeah, epidemiologists. Right.
Okay, whatever you say.
Right.
That in a normal year.
Yeah.
In the United States,
yeah,
36,000 people die of a flu every
right,
year.
Right, but that's identified.
How many people have kicked off so far?
Well,
in this pandemic,
not very many. But no, that's kind of not the point. The point is those people die of a flu virus that is fairly common. This one has never been seen before.
Oh well, you know, give the pharmaceutical company 6 months. And they'll come up with another virus that's not going to work. I'm such a cynic.
Well, you've gotten that way once you hit middle age, Marge.
oh, thanks.
You got very cynical. I remember you when you were young and full.
When I was a kid.
When you were full of piss and vinegar back in the Chicago days, but you know you hit 40 and something happened, right?
Oh, geez. Yeah. Yeah, you sort of bounce around a little bit. The thing that just sort of gets me knowing is Cheney protesting, that we can't release all this stuff. You know, there's another little thing that we want to distract people from.
Yeah.
You know, all these, if we release all these memos, then nobody's going to be able to give freewheeling advice. To the
lead. Oh. Yeah, right.
Does that sort of sound familiar?
Yeah, it does, doesn't
it? Did we ever find out who the hell was in that energy commission that he started back in 01 or 02 or whenever it was?
No.
Do you think we...
Huh?
That would be kind of interesting if we could turn a few of those rocks over.
Yeah, right. It would. It would.
That's the hell of it. When you get to be my age, you know, your memory doesn't go completely to hell in a handbasket.
No.
And you keep going, oh, hey, wait a minute. We never found out about that.
You never found out about what?
Well, you know, what he was
no,
doing
just,
back then. And now we got all these new little things to play with.
Right.
You know?
Right. No, I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. It's just a hell of a situation, Marge. Kathy wants to say something.
No, I think they did come out with a couple or something. Didn't we find out it was all like Enron executives and that type? I'm serious. I mean, all
did
the
they
Cheney's,
ever name them? I know it was speculation, but I don't know that they
I
ever
can't remember, but you're talking about Cheney's super secret energy policy advisors.
Yeah.
They got together. No, I know that one of them ended up, I think, on the
oil company
from oil companies or in, it's something like that. I'm going to Google it.
All right.
There was something that I heard on the news yesterday too that I just kind of, I said, what did he say? It was somebody from an oil company. I can't remember which one.
Yeah.
Was talking about how they were going to help you know, these poor people in Detroit come up with a car that's going to be real energy efficient because that's what they're all about. And I thought, really? Since when? It makes you kind of wonder how many energy-saving devices they buried in the patent office.
Probably more than you and I would want to know about. Marge, we're out of time.
Take care.
All right, don't be a stranger.
All right.
Okay, Marge. Kathy, canceled the plans for the...
Yeah, the answer to that is all of them. How many are buried?
All of them. Cancel the plans for the rescue team to go find Marge. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers, all right? Thanks for hanging out tonight. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.